Today's program is brought to you by the Cheese Cupid Pairing App. For more information, visit cheesecupid.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I can't wait for today's interview. I'm speaking with Dr. Patricia Wright all about lemurs. This is an interview that we've been trying to get for quite a while now, and I've had the most requests from all my listeners about lemurs, so you guys get excited. This is all for you. So, Dr. Patricia Wright, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it. Like I said, everyone has been asking me to do a show about lemurs, so I'm thrilled that you can help us with this.
Great. I love lemurs, too.
I'm excited to get started, so let's just jump in, okay?
Okay.
So let's start off with the first question, simple. What is a lemur?
Well, a lemur is a primate, and that's what we are, too. But it's a primate from Madagascar. They're only found in Madagascar, and there's 103 different kinds.
Wow. And so are they're related to monkeys? They're related to us distantly?
Well, they're distantly related to monkeys. They're sort of our most distant relatives.
Are there any similarities between them and us?
Oh, yeah. They're amazing creatures. They're very, very social, and they have lots of spunk and joy in their lives. And they're very well. The thing I like about lemurs is that females are the leaders.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
So it's great to follow animals and to get close to animals where the females are calling all the shots.
I love it. That's really awesome. It's about time. So what is a typical lemur diet?
Well, most lemurs eat some fruit and some leaves and maybe something else, which could be insects or could be seeds or something to get protein from.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of protein in leaves, but that's some of the lemurs eat nothing but leaves.
Wow. And what is their living situation like?
Well, some of them live in large families, like the ring-tailed lemur. They have groups of 15, 25.
Wow.
Yeah, but then there's some, like the Indri, they'll come in family groups, male, female, and offspring.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some that are solitary, and they just meet in the night. Those are the romantic lemurs, mouse lemurs and things. And then there's others that have large groups with several males, several females, and all the offspring. So they come in a variety of different social systems and social structures, which makes it very interesting for me, because we can study what makes the difference, what kind of difference does it make to have fruit, for example, in your diet.
Uh-huh.
And that means that you maybe can be in a larger tree, and therefore you can have a bigger group size because you can all eat together. But for some of the animals that live in the dark and in the night and eat insects half their diet, eating insects requires you to solitarily stalk those insects and eat them. So they have a very different social life.
Wow. It's amazing how different, I mean, since there are 103 different kinds, like, you know, it's kind of like the characteristics always kind of go, well, it depends because of, you know, it's not, doesn't seem to be a blanket thing for these guys.
No. And it's nothing that they do is like, it's like ordinary. They do special things. Some of them are very specialized feeders. Like we have two species that eat eat bamboo, but the bamboo shoots that they eat are filled with cyanide, which is very, very poisonous.
Well, that's crazy.
And would kill any of us if we ate the same amount they did. And but they seem to just delight in eating this cyanide-rich bamboo, so they have some special secret that they have physiologically probably to tolerate that much cyanide. And then we have other of the lemurs that, you know, eat nectar, and they're just feeding on nectar and getting fat. And they, in fact, they double their body weight in 6 months.
Wow.
And then after that, they go on a diet. But when they go on a diet, it's a serious diet,
yeah,
because they go to sleep for 6 months. They go underground and hibernate.
You're kidding.
You know. And then when they wake up, sure enough, they're skinny again. They got to start all over.
I can't believe they hibernate. I can't believe. Okay, you just got me on the underground and the hibernation. I was not expecting you to say anything even close to that on this entire interview. I'm fascinated.
And they are primates. I mean, they are the only primates that actually hibernate for that long, but it's pretty amazing.
And are they hibernating for a seasonal thing, or is it a growth thing, or?
I think it's winter time, and mm-hmm. there's a lot less food, especially insects, available. And there's no flowers, and they eat a lot of nectar. So they just decide, okay, we just go underground and tough it out.
Like, how cold does Madagascar get in their winter?
Well, I think the coldest we had last year was about 10 degrees centigrade.
That's cold.
I don't know how cold that is, but that's cold.
That's cold,
but not freezing.
God, I had no idea. It's so funny, you know, because you picture, you know, Madagascar and where it is, and, like, it's always beautiful and it's always warm. Like, I'm just amazed by this whole thing. And so, okay, when they breed, is there a consistency regarding gestational periods and how many kids they have, or is that a whole thing, too?
No, that's different for everyone.
Wow.
For the smaller little mouse lemurs, you know, little mouse lemurs are only a couple ounces, and you can hold them in your hand. They're so tiny,
mm-hmm.
and they have, because they're small, they have lots of predators. I mean, all the snakes love to eat them, and the hawks and eagles love to eat them, mm-hmm. and the mongooses love to eat them. So they, in order to withstand all this predation, they have two or three offspring every mm-hmm. year, and they can breed in their first year. When they're 1 year old, they can breed. So, so they're reproducing quite often with lots of infants, but mm-hmm. of course they get eaten.
Yeah.
And then you have the Indri, which is the largest of all the primates, and they give birth to one baby every 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, so, you know, for a female, even if she lives to be 30 years old, she's still not going to have too many offspring that survive. So so there's a great variety. A lot of the lemurs give birth every year to one offspring, and then some of the lemurs give birth every other year or every third year, depending on the size. The bigger ones breed less often.
As a researcher, these guys must keep you on your toes all the time. I can't even imagine.
Well, we've just discovered all these things. We didn't know anything about lemurs until about 20 years ago when we started to study their behavior and be able to follow them around. And, of course, now we have the advantages of even being able to study their genes and their genetics. So we can learn a lot about their dispersal and family groups, not only by watching them, but also looking at the genetics. So it's been great fun to be able to learn all this about lemurs in just a couple decades.
It's amazing. And so I'm assuming you could go down there all the time. Are you starting to get a relationship with these guys? Like, do they recognize you?
Oh, yeah. They're my second family.
Aww.
And, I mean, they're beautiful. I'm studying the shifakas, which are the largest ones, just gorgeous animals. Also the bamboo lemurs.
Mm-hmm.
There's three species of bamboo lemurs. And then I'm in on this mouse lemur project that we're trying to get the genetics of about hundreds and hundreds of mouse lemurs. We have 600 that are marked now, and
wow,
we're trying for 1,000.
Wow.
There's a lot of mouse lemurs out there. It's very nice.
So if you go to Madagascar, is the place just crawling with lemurs everywhere?
Well, I would like to say yes, mm-hmm. but of course, you know, 90% of the forest is gone.
Ugh.
And although we've been protecting this Ranomafon National Park, mm-hmm. which is about 112,000 acres,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, a good size,
yeah,
And that national park has a lot of lemurs in it. And so if you come visit, yeah, I can show you four or six species just in a couple hours inside the park that you can see very well. But in general, lemurs are really in trouble. We did a study. We primatologists did a study of how many lemurs are there. All of us, 60 of us, got together and told each other about where we had seen different species, and found out that 91% are in danger of extinction.
Wow.
And that's really serious. In fact, inside our park, we have like four that are critically endangered, and then a couple additional ones that are endangered, and then many are threatened. And that's because a lot of the forest outside the park has already been destroyed, slash and burn, agriculture, timber exploitation, fragmentation, a lot of issues. So we try not to dwell on the sad stuff, and we're just trying to do everything we can to save the lemurs we've got.
And are they hunted at all, or are they, it's just basically
not environment? In the park, but outside the park they are, so they're hunted. And that's an added problem.
Wow.
A lot of the village elders have said that they should not be hunted, and that's a good thing to have the custom already there, them not to be hunted.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not in all areas, and so in the northern parts of Madagascar, they are still hunted for food.
And so. Perfect timing with the elders. Are there any myths that surround lemurs?
Oh, there's a lot of different myths surrounding lemurs. One time I asked them about hunting, and the village elder turned to me and said, "No, we don't hunt them." And I said, "Well, why not?" And he said, "Look at them. Look at their faces. Look at their hands. They're just like us. Our ancestors were lemurs. We can't hunt them."
Awesome.
And I was like, "Oh, wow!" there's some of them, like I don't know if you've heard of this strange lemur called the Aye-Aye. Well, it's fairly large. It's bigger than your cat.
Okay.
And it's but it's very it's nocturnal. It has huge ears, like a, you know, for its size, like an elephant-sized ear.
Oh, wow.
And then it has teeth like a rodent, like a rat. And it can gnaw on wood.
Oh, wow.
And then it has a strange adaptation of really long, skinny fingers. And what it does is it listens to dead wood. And then it hears something inside it, and it taps, you know, to make sure that the thing it's looking for, which is a nice, juicy grub, is inside. Then he uses his teeth to get to that grub.
Wow.
And then sticks his finger in, which is long and skinny, and has a rotating cuff on the last digit.
Oh, you're kidding.
Is a pretty neat trick. And then he stabs the grub, pulls it out, and eats it down like candy.
How funny.
It's amazing. It's a really smart animal, too. It has the largest brain size for its body size of any of the lemurs. But it is so weird looking because it has very, very long, like wiry hair and that funny face because of the teeth like a beaver and the weird fingers. The people in the north are kind of spooked out by it.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
And they say that you have to kill one if you see one.
Oh, no.
It's just not good. And so they have this habit. Luckily, the people around the Ranomafon National Park don't feel that way.
Good.
But the people in the north, so they are at risk. And those animals are very strange. They only give birth like once every 3 years.
Wow.
So, you know, you have an animal that gives birth so infrequently, it's at risk anyway. And then if they kill it, that's really bad.
Yeah,
so
seriously.
Anyway, there are good things that some people say about some of the lemurs and bad things that other villagers believe in. So we have to kind of try to work with them to love all their lemurs.
Totally.
And we do a lot of work with grade school kids and and local people, just to teach them about the value of this extraordinary forest, and not just the lemurs, but also the chameleons and all the wonderful creatures that live inside the forest of Madagascar.
And so, let me see here. I mean, I feel like this question is, it's such an open question. But I wanted to ask you is, because they evolved in an isolated landmass, you know, like the Galapagos and all those animals, if their evolution is different than other animals in their genus. But I mean, I think it's kind of obvious that it is, huh?
It's certainly different. I mean, those animals have been isolated for 60 million years.
Wow.
And I mean, that's just amazing because, you know, monkeys didn't even appear on this earth till maybe, you know, 25 million years ago.
Wow.
So they had a long time to be on Madagascar. That's why there's 103 species. I mean, Madagascar is big. I mean, it's the size of California or Texas.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's as big as France, I think. It's a really big, about 1,000 miles long and 350 miles wide. And so, and different ecosystems. I mean, it's just fascinating. We, we live in the rainforest, but there's also, you know, tropical dry forest, and there's mangroves, and there's spiny desert. Just all these different ecosystems where lemurs are everywhere, where there's natural habitat. Lemurs, many, many species live together. So at one time, there were just millions of lemurs on Madagascar, but when people arrived 2,000 years ago, they began to slash and burn, and this is why we have such little of these natural habitats left. Mm. But what we do have is really beautiful.
Good.
And I recommend you all to come over and see it.
I've always wanted to go. I mean, ever since I first heard the name when I was a child, it just sounds so exotic and it sounds so amazing. You know, it's one of those things, too, that it's one of those places that if you say to someone, like, where's Madagascar? I mean, you get all kinds of really interesting answers. It seems like that a lot of people just don't know where it is. A lot of people, oh, it's in the Caribbean, right? It's like, well, it's kind of West Caribbean, you know what I mean? Or, like, really East Caribbean, depending which way you're looking at the map.
And it's pretty far south, too. It's just amazing. It's just stuck off in that Indian Ocean, about 350 miles away from Africa.
It really is that far, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's really all by itself.
Wow.
Last year, about this time, I took a cruise ship. I was a scientific advisor and expert and gave talks for a group of people. And I went from Mozambique across that channel by boat to Madagascar. And, wow, it is far. It took us like 2 days and nights.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was, once we got there, it was amazing. We arrived at, you know, it's also a large coral reef. I mean, it might be the second largest in the world that exists in Madagascar. So we went by the coral reef and walked in and saw a lemur right away.
Oh, yay. Oh, that's awesome. Well, we need to take a quick commercial break. I am talking to Dr. Patricia Wright all about lemurs, everybody's favorite animal. We will be back in about a minute, minute and a half.
Help me find a way.
And this one's called Keep It Together by Zooli. We'll be right back.
Keeping everybody on the toes now. Making it so hard to keep a balance. Balancing between the people.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid app. Play matchmaker with the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid app. A tap here, a tap there. With this app, you can quickly discover perfect cheese and drink pairings from the convenience of your own palm. For more information, visit cheesecupid.com.
So we are back. I'm talking to Dr. Patricia Wright all about lemurs. I am beyond fascinated. These things are wild. I can't even believe the information that I'm hearing about it. It's amazing. So, Dr. Wright, I had spoken to the director of Racing Extinction a couple months ago, and we were talking about, you know, his movies all about how we're everything's going extinct at very high speeds. And one of the things that he said is that one of the problems with all these different animals that are on the planet is each of them have a certain job in order to help the planet move along. And by extincting them, you're losing out on these duties that these animals have that helps with the ecology of everything. So what do lemurs do for Madagascar?
Oh, lemurs. Lemurs are very important to Madagascar. First of all, since they were the first animals to get to Madagascar, even though there was an extraordinary number of plants there already and trees there already, but there weren't any birds and there weren't any bats.
Oh.
So it was the lemurs who evolved into niches of eating and seed eating fruits and dispersing the seeds of these trees and eating flowers and actually pollinating them.
Oh, wow.
I've seen those little, I mean, they go from flower to flower and they get pollen all over their noses. They look ridiculous, but they're doing a job. It's an important job of pollinating those flowers, and so that there'll be trees into the future and vines, etc. So yeah, they do what we call ecosystem services.
Mm.
And that means they have a lot of jobs to keep that ecosystem going. The birds and the bats did come, but the birds, there's very few fruit-eating birds.
Really?
So they, yeah. And mostly the birds are insect-eating.
Huh.
And so that part of it may be because the lemurs were doing such a good job
mm-hmm.
of doing pollination and seed dispersal, there wasn't any space for the birds to evolve into the fruit eating niche. I don't know. It's hard mm-hmm. to prove that. And also the bats. The bats are a lot of them are insect eating,
mm-hmm.
not fruit eating. So there you go. If it wasn't for lemurs, that forest wouldn't be nearly as diverse and vibrant as it is. So they do a lot of ecosystem services.
That's really cool. And so, I mean, it's so funny. I this is the one animal that I really know nothing about at all, and actually didn't research ahead of time because I really wanted to be genuinely surprised and generally learning on the show. What is their energy level like? Like, what does a lemur do all day?
Oh, wow. I mean, lemurs are quite amazing. They get up early and they start to forage. But the thing that I think about lemurs is their jumping abilities. I mean, they are just so acrobatic as they go through the trees. It's almost like they're flying.
Oh, cool.
And they land feet behind feet first. So
huh.
they can jump. They have such spring in their legs. I mean, every day that I watch them, it's like better than watching anything. It's just wonderful to see them. So here they are. They're very energetic. And you see the little mouse lemur, that little one that could sit in the palm of your hand?
Yeah.
And suddenly it goes way up to the top of the tree, 30 meters, and then the next
thing
you see it going whipping along at breakneck speed almost to it, down to the ground, and then it'll suddenly catch some insects and then it'll go zipping off again. You know what, that IMAX film?
Yeah.
When they filmed that mouse lemur scene, the cameraman came to me and they said, "I can't believe it. That's the fastest animal." I just, you know, I know because I have frame by frame how fast he was moving. You know, so they do have a lot of energy. But then, of course, there's always the ones that are a bit lazy. And we have one called the lepilemur, and it sleeps in holes in trees during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And during the night, it sleeps a lot, too. And it just, you know, it eats only leaves. And it eats leaves that have alkaloids in them
uh-huh.
only because it's very specialized in the kind of leaves it eats. But that one is a little lethargic. And then I already told you about the one that sleeps half its life away. So yeah, that's pretty lazy, too. So as I said before, they do a lot of different things. Each species is so different one from another. And then, of course, you've heard of the ring-tailed lemurs the stink fights that they do. I mean, that's really amazing.
Yeah, what is that about? Can you describe that a little bit?
Sure. You know, it's like breeding season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the, you know, lemurs start to strut their stuff. And the male lemurs, they bring their tail up against their wrists, where they have these glands that have this special smelling stuff.
Mm.
And they anoint their tail, and then it's, you know, they bring their tail up through their legs and anoint it with their wrists. It's mm-hmm. really interesting. And then they let their tail go, and they put it up in the air, like a warthog, you know? And then they start to wave it in the air, and they start coming, all the males together, to fight with another group of males.
Oh, wow.
And you have, on the ground, they're just like walking on the ground like they're, you know, a battalion of soldiers, but they're waving. Instead of guns, they've got these tails.
Wow.
And they're waving them like they're threatening the other side. And the other side is threatening them. And they get really close. And then all of a sudden, one of the groups just charges the other group.
Wow.
And then you have then chaos. It's just chaos. And they're chasing each other and everything. But this is, it's called by us primatologists, it's called stink fighting.
I'm seeing visions of West Side Story in my head, like lemurs dressed up like the sharks and the jets.
Yeah, it's really just like that. It's just amazing.
So do they get hurt, or is it mostly just for show?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes they get hurt. They do have canines, which are just like those knives in the West Side Story.
Yeah.
They can slash each other up. But hopefully the losing side will run away fast enough so they don't get hurt.
So do the males choose the females to breed with, or are the females in charge of that, too?
Oh, the females in charge.
All right.
Oh, yeah. You know, they fight each other to get access to the female, and the female just kind of is strutting around, and she knows she's an estrus, and she knows she has the choice. If she doesn't like the male that arrives first, she'll just sit down. it's like amazing, and he's, you know, been fighting, and then suddenly she sits down, and he just looks at her because he can't kind of do anything. so she probably likes more than one of them, shall I say?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So
modern lemur.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
She takes charge of who she mates with and who she doesn't, and. It's great fun to watch them. It really is. It's an amazing time because the other thing about lemurs is they breed once a year. So and they're all kind of coordinated within a couple weeks. So there's a lot of action.
I was going to say X-rated forest for a couple weeks a year.
Yeah, just amazing. And then it's all quiet again. Then we only have to worry about the predators and things, but sex takes a back seat to that the rest of the year.
So what drew you to study lemurs?
Wow, I never thought I'd study lemurs. For my dissertation, for my PhD, I went down to the Amazon and I studied night monkeys. I didn't study lemurs.
Huh.
And I've studied the world's only night monkey at that time. And
oh, wow.
That was great because I was the first person, the only person to study them.
Oh, cool.
But then I went to Madagascar to actually find out if one of the lemurs we thought was extinct, whether it was extinct, because it hadn't been seen for such a long time by Western scientists. And in that search, I found a new species to science, which is the golden bamboo lemur, and I found the one that was maybe extinct, the greater bamboo lemur. We thought it was extinct because it was very abundant in the fossil record, and then it hadn't been seen for 50 years. So then we found both of them, and they're absolutely in a beautiful forest, and they were extraordinary, and nobody had ever studied them before. So I started my research in Madagascar on these animals, and then the timber exploiters came and started to chop down the forest.
Mm.
It wasn't a protected area. And so I went to the Ministry of Water and Forest and told them to please stop. Allow people to cut down the forest and make it a protected area. And they said, well, those people do have concessions. They have, they're able to cut it down legally.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we have to do something about that because we didn't know before about these new species.
Yeah, totally.
And he said, well, you know, Madagascar is a really poor country. And I think it's, you're right, we should protect that forest, but we can't afford to make the maps and do the boundaries and everything. But if you can find the money to make the national park, we'll be helping you to do it. And I was an assistant professor then a long time ago, and you know, I thought, oh, my goodness, I can't do something like that.
Yeah.
But then I realized if I didn't do it, nobody was going to do it, and those animals would go extinct, and it would be my fault.
Ugh.
So that's the moment that I became a conservationist, because I couldn't let those animals go extinct. They're so beautiful. So
I just can't
found the money, and we made the national park. It was inaugurated in 1991.
Yay!
And that was with money from National Science Foundation,
awesome.
USAID, the
awesome.
Liz Claiborne Foundation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, it was many different organizations worked together. MacArthur Foundation.
Wow.
And we made the park. And I thought my job was over, but, of course, conservation is never over. That was just the beginning.
Wow.
But now it's been like over 20. Actually, it's our 25th anniversary of the park this year.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
I know. It's really. If I would ever known that we would have been working so hard for so long. It's. But you should come and visit. It's really. We've done a lot of good things for the people around the park and kept the trees up and standing.
Nice.
And the animal populations are increasing.
Yay.
But now, of course, you know, the park isn't big enough, so we're trying to, like, expand it. We're doing reforestation. We've learned a lot about these native trees and how we can grow them and how we can take back that land, because 90% is gone.
Ugh.
And but we have to also think about the people. So we've been planting trees, endemic species, but then underneath those trees, we plant those cash crops.
Nice.
And those cash crops are, you know, vanilla and peppercorns and coffee and all the good things in life, chocolate.
Yum.
So
I'm totally coming to Madagascar.
That's what we've been doing. We've been trying.
That's great. And it's, I mean, that's something that is so important. And it's become a theme on this show. For about the past 6 months, of how crucial conservation is, of, you know, when someone hears something like, oh, there's a little tiny forest over there with a little tiny owl, and people get upset about this, or like, we need a freeway, and it's like, but you don't understand. And I think people are starting to really understand the ramifications of extincting all these species and, like, what it's doing to us, you know? And so I'm hoping this increases so that, you know, people get a little more empathetic and understand. Because there is more than like, oh, but he's cute, you know? There's so much more to it than that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all these little species just hold our world together, really. It's very important. It's certainly important in Madagascar, but it's important everywhere.
And, I mean, honestly, thank God for people like you that are willing to go the extra mile and to educate people and to help them and to do all this instead of just sitting around going, wow, that's really a bummer. I wonder what I should do. You know, like, I mean, this has taken a major part of your life, I would assume, and it must be just so wonderful. Besides the fact that you found a certain lemur, I mean, that would make my head explode. I would be like, I am the king of lemurs if I did this. But then to be able to, like, help them and help them survive and educate people about it. I mean, I'm so grateful for what you do, and I'm so grateful for what I've learned, because next thing, I'm going to go home and pick up a book on these guys and really study them. I had no idea.
Yeah, but we need more help than just reading about them.
What can people do to help out?
I'm hoping that we really need an army of people to help reforest and to help study them. There's an awful lot we don't know yet. So as I said, I invite you to come to Madagascar and see how you can help, because it's really important. Right now you're helping a lot because more people will understand that lemurs even exist.
Yeah.
And that's important. But I'm hoping that we'll have many, many people joining together to help those lemurs out,
so
help
is
them
this,
to be able to survive till the future.
Is this like a volunteer opportunity for people?
Yes, yes. I think we accept volunteers.
Okay, cool. And so if, let's say, someone's listening and is like, I want to go to Mascar and, I don't know, count lemurs or plant coffee, how would they be best to get in touch with you guys?
Okay, they should go to my website, which is CentralValbio .org.
Okay.
Okay, and it's CentralValbio, or if they can, or email me.
Okay.
They can find me on the web.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. And so do you have a favorite lemur story you'd like to share with us?
Oh, there's so many. It's really hard. But I think probably the most exciting time when I was working at as an assistant professor at Duke University, and at the Duke Lemur Center. Do you know the Duke Lemur Center in North Carolina?
No,
it's
idea.
A beautiful place. And if people want to see lemurs in the U.S., that's the place to go.
Cool.
And I worked there at that time. Now I'm working at Stony Brook University.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time I was working at Duke. And I went to Madagascar to find the aye-aye.
Mm-hmm.
Now I told you how strange that animal is. And no aye-ayes had ever been brought back to the United States before.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to start a breeding colony.
Yeah.
Because it's such an important, it's the only species in a whole family. And so I get over there, and I ask before I go, how do I do this? How do I catch an eye and bring it back? Of course, and Dr. Simons, who was at that time the director, said, you go over to Madagascar, and you send somebody up a tree, and when you find the nest, they pull them out of the nest.
Oh, wow.
And put them in a sack, and then you bring them back. We have some dog kennels. You can bring them back in a dog kennel. And I got over there, and it was impossible to find an aye-aye because, you know, they're critically endangered. And we went up the first tree, and there wasn't anybody in the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And the second tree, there wasn't anybody in the nest. 136 nests later, we actually found them. And I found two before the airplane came back to take me back to the capital,
mm-hmm.
and those two were both males.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I brought them back, but with Air France, and we arrived in the dog. You remember, there's kennels that I brought them in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to Paris, the stewardess was really angry.
Oh, no.
And she pointed to the kennel. These animals have teeth like beavers.
Oh,
remember,
no.
I told you? And they made a hole in the top of that kennel, just cut right through the plastic. And so I walked over to the cage, and I slowly pushed his head back into the cage. And then I got my duct tape out, never leave home without it,
seriously.
And I wrapped it around the kennel and told her, reassured her that the animal would be fine for the rest of the trip, and she believed me.
Oh, thank God.
and he was, because he had been up during the night. That's what they're nocturnal,
oh,
and
yeah.
Then, of course, the rest of the trip was during the day.
Score.
Okay, so they got back. They were doing quite well at Duke, but they never said anything. They were totally quiet. They were eating. They ate right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to Madagascar to get two females. And I found a female right away. First time we went up and
oh, wow.
looked in a nest, it was a female with a baby female.
Oh.
So I had two females.
Perfect.
But this time, I had a ticket on British Air.
Mm.
And getting from Madagascar to Nairobi wasn't a problem, but when I got, because it was Air Madagascar,
mm-hmm.
when I got to British Air, they said I had to put the animals in quarantine
in
Heathrow for
six months.
And I'm telling them that this is a endangered species,
yeah,
you know, never,
pet.
Oh my God. And then they sent me to KLM.
Oh, thank God.
And I'm like, yeah, explaining to KLM, that, you know, these are, you know, really rare animals, and I have to get them back to the States. It's a mother and baby. And the KLM person behind the desk said, well, let me see them. I didn't want to show him because he was underneath a cloth.
Yeah.
Because that face, you know, it's kind of scary, spooky animal. But he insisted, and when he saw the face, he said, "That's an eye-eye."
Oh, my God.
And I said, "How did you know?" And he pulled out a National Geographic. And it was just the month that Allison Jolly had published her National Geographic article, and there was a picture of an eye.
That's awesome.
He said, "Because it looks just like that."
Yay!
And then he said, "But the problem is we don't have any seats. This is Nairobi. It's August, a high tourist season. We don't have any seats on any flights until September."
Oh, my God.
And I said, "Oh, no." And I started to cry. And then he said, "Except for first class, we have some seats on first class, and this animal certainly deserves that."
All right.
It was the first time I had ever been on first class, and certainly the first time that those wonderful animals had been. So there we were on first class, you know, and they come over and they ask me if I want some champagne and would I like some grapes, and I said, "Yes, yes, yes." And then they said, "What about the animals who were right in front of me?" I said, "What about them?" And I said, I didn't want to tell them that they ate grubs. I had a whole bunch of mealworms in my pocket, but I didn't want to tell them that. And I said, "That it's okay. They don't eat fruits. It'll be all right." And she came back with a banana, and she said, "Look it. This eye is a primate, right?
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's going to eat bananas." And that mother reached out of the cage, grabbed that banana, and pulled it into the cage and ate it. And that's the first time we ever knew that eyes ate fruit.
What a trip.
It was, like, amazing. So then that the stewardess was really confident that she knew more about the animals I did.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So she comes up to me and she says, "You know, even though that is, you know, it's a dog kennel and it wasn't a small cage," but she said, "You know, that cage is a little small for these animals. Why don't you let them out?"
Oh, God, no. Really?
And I just looked at her. I said, "I don't think your other passengers on first class are going to like that idea." But then I fell asleep because it had been really stressful and I was just, you know.
Yeah, done.
And so I fell asleep and she comes back and she said, "I asked all the passengers." They said,
"Oh my
it's
God.
Okay." And so I just opened the cage just a little bit to make her happy because she was so insistent. And then the little baby comes running out of the cage onto my lap and stayed with me, but was on the top of my head and sticking his finger in my ears. I'm lucky to have an eardrum left. And it was just so cute. And every couple hours, the mother would reach out, would make a little sound, reach out, grab the baby, and bring him in for nursing.
Oh, my God.
Because it still
amazing.
Needed milk from the mother. But the mother didn't want to have anything to do with coming out of that
Seriously,
cage.
Seriously.
Didn't like us
woman.
At all. No. But the baby was really cute. And we made it back to Duke, no problem. And the nicest thing about this story is we got into the Duke Lemur Center, and all of a sudden, the males who had been totally quiet for a year suddenly started to call, and the female called back, and the males called, and there was this joyous, like, reunion. It was just amazing.
Oh.
And now I can say it was really amazing because I think there's been 30, more than 30, offspring born
awesome.
At Duke. And you have to go to the Duke Lemur Center and see their eyes. They're wonderful.
I wish I knew last year I was right there. well, that's a good excuse
well,
to go back.
No, I'm so far.
You got me. Like I'm so like, I'll totally volunteer and come to Madagascar. I'll do it tomorrow. Like, I'm so excited about all of this. And sadly, we're running out of time because I could talk to you forever. But thank you so much for all your information. And it's so fun to talk to you. You're so excited about this. And I love that. It's one of my favorite things about the show is just hearing everybody's love for these animals and the excitement that they have and the willingness to do this. I mean, this is not like a simple job, you know. And
No, it isn't simple. And as I said, I need help.
And if we can get it for you, I mean, seriously, if I can get some time off, I will be calling you, I promise you, because this is something that, like, I'm all, like, sitting here, like, I got to do this right now. So, like, you're definitely going to be hearing back from me, hopefully sooner than later.
That would be great. Well, you're certainly welcome. And
thank you
for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. I learned more on this show than I have in a really long time. I had a great, great time. And, you know, thank you again for everything. The website again is, can you read that website again for me?
Yes, Centro Val Bio, CentreValBio.
Perfect. And that's .org.
Yes.
Great. So, again, thank you so much. I hope it warms up for all of us here in New York soon. And for everybody else, I'm going to be away next week. However, we will have a guest host, Denise Herman, will be here. See you all in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening and take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.